Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, the podcast.
Packed last hour here on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin. Presented by Progressive Insurance. That voice you just heard is not Key. It's Bart Scott, the 11-year NFL vet. Key, hopefully
Zubin,
back tomorrow.
Right now, when you hear that song, when it's bumping with some tens in the back, you ever have tens in the back? You put tens in the car?
No, I had a. I had a Honda Civic, so
that's
I was just hoping.
Car for the tens, man.
and you got them, but you know, they ain't even in a box. They're just in the back.
They're
fall
in the
over.
Back. They're falling over.
Hit your boy in the head. You're picking up the speaker. Gave me a concussion.
Sorry, Zubin. Sorry, it brought me back. You know what I mean?
No problem.
About when the bass hits.
Take care of a Honda, you can drive it forever. I feel like we're on the halftime report. What car are we doing here? Is it the Mercedes-Benz? Is it the Jeep halftime report? What is going on here?
Bro, Honda can go 200,000 miles without an oil change, baby. That was reliable.
No question about it. Speaking of reliable, Big Ben has won 2 Super Bowls, could be in line for a third. By the way, this is an amazing stat. We're going to have some big NBA news we're going to talk here about in just 2 minutes. Ben's won 2 titles. The NBA news concerns a guy still looking for his first, and I promise you, hang on in 2 minutes. We'll have it for you. Ben Roethlisberger's first of 2 Super Bowls, the one they won with defense after the 2005 yep. regular season. Obviously, he won the other one when he hits Antonio Holmes. But the first one, Ben Roethlisberger's first Super Bowl, he was 23 years and 320 days old.
Yeah.
The reason I mention that? He's the youngest guy to ever win the Super Bowl at the quarterback position. 23 years, 320 days. Then he won a second. They're 8-0. They have to be one of the favorites to win a third. Bart, he wins a third. Oh, fill in the blank. He wins a third.
Potentially first ballot Hall of Famer. Now, I know Jay Will got some things that's going to keep him away from first ballot, but his resume would be cemented. He's one of the best in the game. And I think because he's so physical, he sits in the pocket, and he takes these big hits, he swats people down. But I think we underappreciate him. You know what I mean? We used to call him Michael Slick because people don't realize just how elusive he is. And he's like a dancing bear at times. Sometimes you have a clear shot on him and he can make you miss. And he's always had the knack for the dramatic. You know, he's like Michael Myers, right? You think you killed him. I remember breaking his nose one time. It was crooked. All he did was put the tissue in his nose. You know, he's one of the guys that can – like, it's crazy. He played – and he had plastic surgery. I was like, man, what do I have to do to kill this guy? I hit him one time. I thought he was dead. He got him. Like, this dude's my
– You have to stay. Yeah, you don't hit and then run away. You keep hitting.
Exactly, man. I feel like Mike Tomlin is like Paul Bearer. Get up. Like, what does this dude do? The Undertaker, man. I can't wait. What does this dude got to do to die? But, you know, he came back, and we didn't know what he was going to be after the elbow surgery.
Right.
And he's come back, and he's picked up right where he left off. He had to get the 3 B's out of there because we understood that couldn't go forward. That became a dysfunctional relationship. But what he's been able to do this year, 8-0, one of the best record in Steelers history, he has the opportunity to go to rarefied air. And if he gets there, I think he moves up past John Elway. Yeah, I said it. He moves up past Dan Marino. He moves up there right underneath those guys that are Montana, Terry Bradshaw,
Brady.
He's
Brady.
He's one slot under the great.
Right under Mount Rushmore looking up. And we don't know how much longer he's going to play because he takes so many hits. And he reminds me of the late, great Steve McNair with just – you look at his injury report, it's like, bro, this is an encyclopedia.
Mm.
But you definitely have to put him in as far as the Hall of Fame.
If he wins a third, he will be that one slot beneath the Mount Rushmore of great quarterbacks as it relates to Super Bowl championships. There's no doubt about that. And when you think about Ben Roethlisberger, you have to look at the full body of work. I think that's really important, Bart.
Yeah.
So the full body of work on the field displays one thing that should have him be a first ballot Hall of Famer. But we also live in a world where people have subjective views based upon what they value. And not everybody just values what your on-field stats are. They also value what happened off the field. And unfortunately, I think for Ben, some of the things that happened off the field have made it a little bit more of murky water when it comes to determining what ballot Hall of Famer he will be.
Exactly, because we saw things off the field keep Randy from going first ballot.
Exactly.
They kept Charles Haley from going in first ballot because it's supposed to be about what you did on the field, but we understand that the human element always comes in that. So I think that may stop him from being, you know, first ballot. But if he gets 3, it's going to be hard for you not to put him there because he's a quarterback and he's played in one of the toughest divisions in all of football for, you know, well over, 15 years. So, I mean, it's a fascinating kind of – you know, test to kind of think about where does he fall because he's right there tied with Eli. But even before, you know, he wins this next one, I would say that he was a better quarterback than Eli and Phillip Rivers. You know, we always talk about that draft class that had, Marino, Elway,
84,
Kelly.
1984.
Yeah, we always talk about that. We got to start putting respect on that draft as well because they're going to have 3 Hall of Famers. And Phillip Rivers is the only one that's probably going to leave without a title. But you have 4 Super Bowl championships in between that draft class. So we're going to have to start elevating that class. I know we want to talk about the class that's in now, whether it's the Deshaun Watson and Mahomes. But, you know, that one was definitely something special. And they controlled and dominated the NFL for an era.
Tiger Talk in 4 minutes. Andy
Ooh,
North,
Tiger
the
Woods, y'all. Give me some fajitas.
U.S. Open champion. They did have the Masters Champions Dinner last night, if you're unaware of that. The defending champion always gets to set the menu for the next year's championship, and fajitas was on the menu. So was a tuna roll. There was also some wine. I know you love wine, from Tiger. So we'll get into that with Andy North.
We talking about a cab? We talking about a blend? What
it was hard to
here?
Tell. They just kind of tweeted out a photo of the menu.
Wine, man. Somebody's making a wine in my name, and I'm trying to figure out what I want to like.
I'm a big Camus guy.
I love Caymus, C-A-Y-M-U-S. Man. It's too damn expensive, though, man.
Well, no,
it's like $200 a bottle. I bought it on a budget.
I didn't say you drinking it every day. It's like table wine.
Well, you say you drink it every day, so
I
told
you. Every once in a while when you celebrate a good occasion. Oh, you know, you make an investment in yourself.
So you drink Andres, and then when it's very special.
I don't drink the Andre Iguodala's.
You know, I'm talking about the Andres out of the cart.
I know.
The old school, the box wine.
Box wine.
Well, here we go. They would break out champagne if the Rockets could win their first championship in 25 years. The liquor would be flowing. But this is interesting. This morning from Woj, the NBA's best insider, and Tim McMahon, who was all over the Rockets and the Mavs, one of the best reporters in the state of Texas in hoops. Both guys reporting this morning on a story that's just posted on ESPN.com. In the wake of the departures of head coach Mike D'Antoni and their general manager, Daryl Morey, now both obviously in Philadelphia, James Harden and Russell Westbrook have expressed concerns about the direction of the franchise. They have a new general manager in Raphael Stone. They have a new head coach in Steven Silas, who has been a career-long assistant for 19 years, never been a head coach. So now the two most important players in the franchise, Harden and Westbrook, are expressing concern about the direction of the team after a new general manager and a new head coach are now in charge in Houston. That seems to be breaking news, but it's not to Jay Will, who basically 4 days ago on this program said this.
And mark this down. James Harden will not win a championship with the Houston Rockets. I think he will go somewhere else eventually to try to get that done.
Jay?
If you're James Harden, you're sitting there saying, okay, Father Time is undefeated. How long do I have to continue to play at this caliber of level of basketball? And if anything, Steven Silas, great that you've been an assistant coach for 19 years. Raphael Stone, great that this is going to be your first time as a GM. But I need better pieces around me. I'm trying to win a world championship. Not yesterday, not 2 years ago, three years ago, 4 years ago. I need to win one now. Now, and we're not doing that with small ball. I bought into Daryl Morey. I bought into Mike D'Antoni. No, they are no longer here. It's time for me to go somewhere else. I do not think James Harden will stay a Houston Rocket. I think him and Russell Westbrook will find a way to force themselves out of this situation. I will oppose this as well. Daryl Morey did get hired by the Philadelphia 76ers. That was done for a reason. Not only because he's a talented GM, he's a genius in his own fashion, but also because of his relationship with James Harden. He drafted James Harden. He found James Harden, made him a believer, gave him the keys to the franchise. You're telling me for all this talk about whether Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid can coexist? Mm-hmm. I've been talking about this, it feels like, for years between these two. The passive aggressiveness between them both. Who's the leader of this team? Who's going to take on the ownership of saying, this is my team? You're telling me that maybe for a potential straight-up trade,
straight up. That's right.
Straight up. Ben Simmons for James Harden. Now, what they decide to do with Russell Westbrook for more assets, that's to be determined. But if you're Daryl Morey, if you're the Philadelphia 76ers, you're trying to make this happen. Because that pairing between James Harden and Joel Embiid with some other assets around you defensively and you get the right shooting, I like that combination. Because now you have a guy who is averaging seven assists a game, and James Harden, yeah, a guy that can shoot lights out. You involve him in a pick and pop with a guy like Joel Embiid. You can play fast. You can also play slow in the half court. That's a pairing I love to see together.
Now, do you add Al Horford to that? Because now you want the floor open, and you know that Joel Embiid and Al Horford can't play together, so maybe you can try and make the money match that way by sending Al Horford as well with Ben Simmons to open up the space and maybe get more assets. Now, tell me this. What other place?
Also, can I add, I was going to say, sure, also to add on to that, they brought Doc Rivers in because Doc Rivers was the one coach that was able to unlock Tobias Harris.
Yeah.
Right? So that was something they paid Tobias Harris a lot of money.
Yeah.
A lot of money. And he didn't live up to that expectation last year. So now that you bring that coach in, combined with a guy who can shoot, think about this. Yeah. I play with players like this. When you play with a guy who can't shoot, the defense slacks off you. So all of a sudden, if you're a guy trying to find the rhythm, you can't get to the cup because there's always a random defender looming around. Yeah. You kick it out to Ben. Remember Mike D'Antonio? The head coach of the Philadelphia 76ers, Brett Brown, was trying to mandate that Ben Simmons was going to shoot the ball, but Ben Simmons never shot the ball, right? So it clogs up the lanes. That's why Joel Embiid couldn't go to work because the lanes were always clogged. Right. So now if you kind of make that disappear, now you can't clog up the lane on James Harden.
Right.
How are you going to play that?
And Embiid can open up the floor, too, and space the floor as well because he's a guy, a big man that can shoot. But tell me this, then. We have another team that's desperate to win, and they want to keep their star happy in Giannis Antetokounmpo. Yeah, I can't say it.
Just say Giannis. Yeah, it's Giannis. Like Prince.
Yeah, I told you I got an associate's degree. But, you know, when you think about the Milwaukee Bucks, and if you send, you know, Harding there, they have the assets to maybe send back and give them more of a young core that can be up there, whether it's Bledsoe or you think about George Hill, or, you know, they got a lot of assets that they can free up. It seems like they have more players that they can send to Houston. How would you like to see maybe Harden maybe go to the Bucks?
I mean, that would be another great conversation, I'm sure.
Maybe, you know, send Chris Middleton.
That crew. I mean, if you're sending Chris Middleton, Eric Bledsoe, potentially another asset, you have to think about that if you're Milwaukee. You're trying to win yesterday as well. I mean, how many times you're trying to get to the conference finals? You're trying to win the whole thing. Granted, the season happened in the bubble, but I think James Harden and Giannis together would be an incredible pairing. The question is, you know, then what do you do if you're Houston with Russell Westbrook? And I've also said this. We talked about it on your show on Bart and Hahn, where I was like, look, and I heard Alan May mention of this too, your co-host, the New York Knicks. And for Houston, if you get assets in return, you know, if that's things that can come off your books, a lot of expiring contracts, right, you're able to get cap space, you're able to then go into the market next year after the cap kind of gets worked through after this year, maybe you get a higher draft pick, you're rebuilding mode. If you're accepting that as Houston, which I would think if you have a first-year head coach, a first-year GM as well, right? People already talked about how their owner is a little bit strapped for cash, even though he is willing to go over the luxury cap. I think that could be another scenario for them, and it brings Russ to New York City, which, look, New York City is dying for a guy to want to be here. Want to be a star that wants to be here. Maybe, you know, for the way he plays, you start building around that. Maybe him, RJ Barrett, some other pieces that you start building around.
Yeah. We'll continue to follow the conversation here over the next several days. And if anything breaks with CP3, we'll let you know. Keyshawn, J. Will Zubin, brought to you by Straight Talk. Look, we all accidentally damage our phones. It happens. Now, Straight Talk Wireless's new Platinum Unlimited plan includes phone protection, just $65 a month for unlimited talk, text, data, and more. See mobile protect terms and conditions at Asurion.com/Straight Talk. Limitations and exclusions apply. It is a tradition unlike any other at a time unlike any other in this glorious event's 86-year history.
The best part about driving down Magnolia Lane, whether you're doing it for the first time or have done it for decades, is how the light filters and floats through the limbs and the leaves of the trees. It really is one of those rare and fleeting moments of perfection. The kind where you remember how you felt long after you've forgotten exactly what you saw to make you feel that way.
There are few people on earth that write prose and recite it like Wright Thompson. That's ESPN's Wright Thompson on how memorable the Masters is for anybody that's fortunate enough to go to Augusta National. And that's where we head right now. We're joined on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line by Andy North, the two-time U.S. Open champion. He'll be on SportsCenter throughout the day. He'll be on all of our coverage, first and second round coverage of the Masters, exclusively on ESPN Thursday and Friday. Andy, good morning. It's great to talk to you again. I guess we got to start with the question everyone wants to know. What is the state of Tiger's game right now as he looks for an incredible repeat performance?
Well, Z-Man, it's always wonderful to be on with you, first of all. I think it's pretty interesting that a lot of people don't realize that Tiger Woods is actually the defending champion here. It's been so long, and there's been so much talk about how he's not playing any good and how he's not ready and how he hasn't played enough, which is all true. He has not played some great golf. But I think it's really important, the fact that he looks very comfortable here. It looks like his body's working well. And I think if you take a world-class athlete where there's been greatness, and he's in a good spot and he's comfortable, there's a good chance he can play well. Now, his record in the last 12 months would indicate there's no chance that he could compete here, but this is a golf course that he's won on five times. He understands it. It's a course that takes an awful lot of experience on to get it around, understanding where to hit it, where to miss it, those sort of things. And if he can get off to a decent start, and it's all up to his putter. He's hit the ball okay over the last year, but he has not putted very well. So if he can putt the ball decent, you never know. But, you know, when a player's a great player, great things happen once in a while.
Now, you speak about that, you know, the familiarity with the course, but could that be fool's gold? Because now it's in November and everything may look the same, but it's not the same. You know, knowing that the greens could be different and the ball could be different, you know, knowing that the moisture and the conditions from the elements are different from April than it is in November.
Yeah, it's going to be a little bit different. The grass obviously is not as mature as it is in April, but you still, they haven't changed the holes. You still have to play them a certain way. You still have to miss it on the right side of a particular green versus the left side. And he understands that. And I think last year was the perfect example of what a veteran player understands about winning at Augusta. And that was how he played the 12th hole. So many guys went for the pin on the back right pin, put it in the water. Tiger put it 50, 60 feet left. A very safe, smart shot, but that's the kind of shot you have to hit on 12 on a Sunday. And I think that's the kind of experience that a first or second year player just doesn't have.
Now, not just with golf, with all sports, you know, you talk about veteran players kind of understand and be able to perform in the moment. With no fans, will it, you know, be easier to play there for some players that may succumb to the pressure of playing and missing in front of people?
Well, I think that's a big point that both Tiger and Rory have spoken during the season about how there's no energy. They're so used to having so many people around them and feeding off of that energy and people spurring you on when you're struggling. That's a big part. And I think we've seen some younger players have success this year and have actually won some big events because there's nothing else going around. There's not the buzz around it. I think it's probably simpler for an inexperienced player to play when there's no gallery or patrons, as here. But at the same time, this is a little different animal than 3 weeks ago or 6 weeks ago, just a regular tour event.
Andy, Jay Williams here. How you doing, brother, first and foremost?
Jay, well, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. It's like yesterday. We were at Wisconsin practice, man, watching your Badgers hoop.
No kidding.
You know, from being on the golf course a ton and playing in a lot of these, you know, like mini pro-ams, having fans. Like last year, watching the Masters, the amount of roars that you heard from fans on the course when Tiger was making putts, it almost felt like whenever you saw the cameras tune into other players, like their chin would lift up. They would pay attention to it. How does that factor in when you don't know what else is happening on the course? Does that take more? Does it put more pressure on you? Does it take the pressure off, Andy? How do you assume that will be handled?
That's one of the most intriguing parts of this particular championship is that the patrons really do play a big part of it because of the roars and the noise. I mean, I know when I was playing, I knew if it was a Palmer par or a birdie by Nicklaus. I mean, you could tell who made the putt or who made the shot and where it was. And you could tell by the different roars who that player was, which is amazing. And, you know, Tiger's had the same effect on these guys today. And it's not only the positive effect for the player doing it, but it's also negative for guys that, oh, geez, Tiger made another birdie before it even goes up on the scoreboard, or Tiger's done something well. And another spot where it made such a difference, let's say you're on the 11th green and the group in front of you hits it in the water at 12. The groan is unbelievable. I mean, it's like the guy missing the free throw at 1-1 at the end of the game. You know, it's just, oh, my gosh, he's got to shoot another three throw. We're dead. You know, that kind of attitude. And now as the player on the 11th green, you're thinking, oh, geez, you're starting to think about that shot before you need to. So the roars and the groans really do have a big impact, and it's going to be really weird. I walked the golf course on Monday quite a bit, and it was so silent. I mean, you didn't even hear the birds. You know, I mean, it was like, it was eerie. It was like if you've ever gone to the Redwoods, and you get deep into the redwoods and there's not a sound. That's how it feels here.
Last thing for you, the sound that the driver makes when the club face hits the ball off of Bryson DeChambeau's shaft.
It's just like yours, Z-Man. It's the same sound yours makes. Right?
I'm usually a little OB. He might not be. He might be at the top of the leaderboard. But for the casual golf fan, Andy, that may not know this guy hits it a country mile every time he tees it up, how might his game and his reformed body and approach attack Augusta National?
Well, I think, you know, one, there's a couple of things that are very important at Augusta National. Greens and regulation usually indicates the winner or close to it. Very seldom do you have a guy win here that doesn't rank really high in greens and regulation. Of the five Masters, Tiger's won. He's been number one in greens regulation four times and finished number two the fifth time. So hitting the ball on the green in the right place is paramount. But if you can drive it far enough that you've got a pitching wedge into these greens, it's much easier to put the ball in the right position on the green, so you've got some birdie opportunities. So the distance that Bryson is hitting it is going to make such a difference on approach shots, and the fact that he can hit on every one of the par fives easily. He doesn't have to strain to do it. He can just hit a normal drive and a five iron to most of these par fives. So his par basically is 68. So if he can just go out and play to his par, he's going to be really tough to beat. But I think he has not putted the ball very well here in his last 2 years here. Now, he putted great at the U.S. Open. His short game was really good at the U.S. Open. If he can bring that same short game here, he's got a real chance. But unfortunately, to win championship golf, it's not just all about driving the ball. You've got to do a lot of different things. And particularly at Augusta, you have to make sure you don't make a bad swing at the wrong time. And, you know, a bad swing at 12, hit it in the water. Bad swing at 15, hit it in the water. If you had a bad swing at number one, you missed the green and still can get it up in, it's no big deal. So it's where you make bad swings. Can you make key putts? There's a lot that goes into it. And obviously Bryson is one of those seven or eight guys that really are favorites to win here. But I'm really looking forward to seeing where he drives it on some of these holes.
Exclusive first-round coverage on ESPN, exclusive second-round coverage on ESPN Thursday, Friday, and what a Saturday it will be when College Game Day meets the Masters, the best pregame show in sports at Augusta, and then Saturday night on ABC, Wisconsin noted fan Andy North and noted Michigan man Desmond Howard. They'll be both in Augusta on Saturday, and I hope after the third round you guys can enjoy that Big Ten tilt together. We always enjoy our time with you. I can't wait to talk to you tomorrow, Andy. Thank you.
Thanks, Andy.
Thanks, E-Man. And hey, ESPN Plus, the only way you're going to see Tiger Woods play at 7:55 on Thursday morning.
Absolutely.
Ooh, I like that company plug, Andy.
Grab it on the streaming service.
I already got it, Andy.
There you go, boys.
Thank you.
Thanks. Enjoyed it.
He's the best, man.
He is really one of the greats. One of the greats. Still to come, the NBA is back. December 22nd, 72-game season. How did we all get here? That is on the way.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack your 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th, one-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Great opportunity to stop and talk with Garrett Temple of the Brooklyn Nets and the vice president of the National Basketball Players Association, essentially right there in the thick of it as the NBA and the owners, the players and the owners got together to try to get a season going. Garrett, good morning. From what we know, draft on the 18th, free agency on the 20th. The season begins December 22nd with a 72-game regular season. How did it all come together?
Good morning, fellas. Appreciate y'all having me.
What's up, GT?
I mean, what's going on? What up? I mean, y'all got it exactly right. It came together pretty quickly. Obviously, there were talks about doing something in January. I heard that things may even happen as late as March, maybe to try to get fans in the seats. But once we realized, I'm assuming basically the uptick in COVID cases, and then understanding our TV partners, you know, trying to avoid the Olympics and trying to get a Christmas Day game, which is very big for the NBA. We're the only team that plays on Christmas. You know, starting it right before Christmas was something that we wanted to try to do. And, you know, there's obviously been a lot of teams that haven't played since March. So a lot of guys were really itching to get back on the court. And we were able to come up with a scenario that would allow us to get 72 games in, finish before the Olympics, and obviously not have to play too many back-to-backs.
Well, you know, you guys have such labor peace. You know, it's the envy of a lot of other sports. It seems like you guys get along with, you know, Silver really, really well. You know, did it come down to the simple fact that the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few? I mean, you know, the guys that were in the bubble that had the long season, but understanding that it had been guys who hadn't played since last March?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the guys, you know, the championship game, the Lakers, the Miami Heat, the guys that were in the conference finals, and even us, you know, Brooklyn, we played in the first round, guys that were in the bubble. We understood that we wanted it to get back to its original date eventually. So why not try to do it in a time during a pandemic where there will be no fans, maybe travel, maybe a little bit different, maybe a little bit easier. And the fact that, you know, at the end of the day, money is a really big factor here. And, you know, we make the most money when we're able to play on Christmas and finish the season before the Olympics. So all of that being said, as you said, we have a great relationship with the league in terms of being able to negotiate in good faith. Michelle Roberts, our executive director, has done a great job. She's been phenomenal for us. And, you know, it came together quickly, but we're happy with the results.
Garrett, I love the way you represent my Nets, man. There's no doubt there's a future for you in leadership position. You made mention of money. So 10% of player salaries get kept in escrow. That number now needs to go up to 13% for discretionary income that the league can then use in case, you know, some kind of catastrophe happens. How were those negotiations when you guys were in those rooms to think about, hey, look, we have to give up some things in order to get these games? And it feels like there's so many moving parts.
Yeah, there are a lot of moving parts, Jay. And I don't know if we've ever spoken, but I'm a big fan, man. Always been a big fan of yours. You know, the fact that we weren't in rooms, we were on Zoom instead, discussing how to, you know, negotiate, understanding that the ownership will not get their full share of BRI this upcoming season because of the loss of revenue, and trying to figure out how to allow them to get that, but also mitigate, the big time losses from the players' perspective. So to be able to smooth that over 3 years, rather than having to just dump a whole 30% of the salaries back to the owners right away, we're able to smooth that over 3 years, and then do that again the second year, and then the third year. By the third year, we should be back to making the amount of money that we were making before. So the negotiation was tough. Obviously, they wanted more. We wanted less. It goes back and forth. But as you said, when you do things in good faith, eventually you'll come up with a solution.
There's always give and take in any kind of negotiation. What were some of the things that you think basketball has learned? Obviously, you guys are in a bubble, but you're not being a bubble this upcoming season from the likes of MLB or NFL as far as moving forward.
Yeah, no question. And the fact that, you know, the onus is on the players themselves. Once you get out of the bubble, it's on the players to conduct themselves in a way that will allow you to try to stay COVID-free. Obviously, we're grown men and we can do whatever we want to do. But in situations where you miss games, you know, and you put your teammates at risk to miss games, and obviously the whole organization, you have to keep that in mind once you're doing whatever you're doing outside of the gym, outside of the court. I'm assuming we will be getting tested every day. But at the same time, it's on us to make sure we wear our mask, wash our hands, do things to continue to prevent us contracting COVID and obviously spreading it.
Now, will part of the compromise be that it'd be understood that load management would be accepted? I know they want the stars to play on the big games like, you know, Christmas, But you do have to, we all have to understand and accept that, you know, it's going to be a certain amount of players that have an unfair advantage because they haven't fully recovered from the previous season.
Agreed. I mean, I think Adam will understand that more this year. You know, TV partners will understand that a little more this year than in previous years because, as you said, the Lakers and Miami Heat just finished about a month ago in terms of playing the championship game. And training camp starts less than 3 weeks from now, or about 3 weeks from now. So the fact that guys are going to be getting right back into it, and again, some guys are going to have had, you know, almost a year off. So it's going to be very interesting for different teams. I think, again, the fact that we don't have as many back-to-backs. There was a scenario to start in January. If we were to finish in before the Olympics, it would have been 22 back-to-backs. This scenario that we decided to take only has us playing 13 or 14, which is the norm. So we'll have just about the same amount of back-to-backs. And but as you said, guys, we'll have played for a long time, and they'll need a little more rest than usual.
All right, GT, let me get you to take your MBPA vice president cap off and put your player cap on. You know what we love to do with the media, man? Everybody starts this whole thing up. I've heard Stephen A. Smith talk about this, where it's championship or bust for your Brooklyn Nets team. Obviously, you guys get KD. He's been there for a year, coming off that Achilles injury. Kyrie, you guys have Spencer. You have yourself. You have Caris LeVert. How has everything been thus far with you guys as a team? Obviously, bonding is something that needs to happen. That's had to have been difficult considering everything we're dealing with COVID.
No question. It has been pretty difficult. Last year, KD was around a lot. Obviously, Kyrie was around. So that helped. But it's been, you know, 7-8 months since the pandemic hit. And only probably seven guys that were on the original squad went to Orlando. And the other guys, a lot of them got together in L.A. Since we've been finished, we've, you know, been in L.A. People have been in L.A., New York. I've been in New York with my kid now, and now back in Louisiana to visit some family for the quick turnaround. So it's going to be, you know, the onus is going to be on training camp, trying to make sure we get that camaraderie, trying to make sure we get that chemistry down. But I think the fact that guys are just basketball players, there aren't guys that have to do certain things. Guys can really just hoop. And we got a lot of guys that just know how to play basketball. I think that's going to help us. But, you know, in terms of the championship or bust, the talent we have, I think that's the mindset the guys are going in with. That's the mindset we want. You know, we want to win a championship. There's only one winner. You know, it's like Ricky Bobby said, either you first or you last. In the so, at the end of the day, you know, there are no moral victories. No moral victories when you have the talent that we have and, you know, the ability that we have. So we're definitely trying to win.
How have you guys dealt with the media, right? Because I reading an article, it was Steve Nash that said this was going to be a collaborative effort. But then when Kyrie said this is going to be a collaborative effort, obviously it turned into this major story that, hey, they're trying to, you know, say that they're going to outdo Steve Nash and obviously a new coaching staff. How do you guys envision all of this working?
It's going to work, man, because at the end of the day, it's basketball. We got, you know, obviously Steve Nash, a guy that was a maestro on the court. And then to bring in the staff that he's been able to assemble and Coach D'Antoni, Ime, obviously the people that he's brought back, you know, and then being able to, you know, coach guys like Kyrie Irving that has won a championship, KD that has been MVP, won two championships. And obviously, like you said, the Karises, the Spencers, the DeAndres, guys that have been around, Joe Harris's, if we're able to get him back. I think at the end of the day, things will work out the way they're supposed to. And, you know, Steve is the type of guy, you know, getting to know him, that is very collaborative. He's a guy that asks a lot of questions, wants you to talk, wants you to speak up, trying to figure out things. So at the end of the day, we can't worry about what the media says. We understand who the guys on our team are, and that's all that matters.
Fair enough. I do recall the last time Steve Nash and Mike D'Antoni got together, it turned out pretty well. Hopefully it'll be the same thing for you guys, not in the West, but in the East. Garrett Temple with some great perspective. The NBA draft is a week from tonight, and soon enough, the league will be back. Garrett, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks, GT.
No problem. Appreciate y'all having me. See y'all.
You got it. He joined us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, and as always, we are presented by Progressive Insurance. On the way, the real winner of the Masters has already been crowned, even before anyone has taken a swing.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, hold up.
Before I let you go,
one more thing before we let you go.
Sometimes when we say before we let you go, it's something we need to sneak in. It's at the end of the program. Sometimes it's done in a curt manner, a little flippant. We just got to add a note in. This is the polar opposite.
I voted for me. Oh, I thought that's
you just ain't gonna ride that beat like that.
You were saying polar. I know. Okay, sorry.
Polar opposite. This is maybe the most important thing that's going to be said on the show today, especially because I'm sitting next to a pair of African Americans. I know Key's not a big golf fan. We joke about it, but I actually really wish he was here for this. I want to let you guys know about something that has been done by the Masters, which is getting universal acclaim for an event and a golf club that sometimes deals with racial problems in a different way and has not been as positive with regards to reaction as to what I'm about to tell you. So every year at the Masters, I've had the opportunity to go down once. They have what they call a ceremonial tee shot. Before play begins on Thursday, legends of the game stand up, take a tee shot, and the crowd, they call it the patrons there, love it. And it's been Jack Nicklaus, the six-time Masters champion. He's 80 years old. Gary Player, one of the greatest
Who is my boy.
Mm-hmm. One of the greatest international players of all time. They call him the Black Knight. He's always dressed black head to toe. He's 85 years old. He turned 85 this month. He is as spry as can be, by the way. He's in
still
great
hitting
shape.
The ball. Still no knocking doubt. It.
So 80 for Nicklaus, 85 for Player. They've been doing it for years. But for the first time tomorrow, Lee Elder, at the age of 86, the first black man to ever play at the Masters in 1975 will be the third member of the ceremonial tee shot. Fred Ridley, who is the chairman of Augusta National, a great former amateur player himself at the University of Florida, called Elder 10 days ago, told him we're going to do this. It's not just because it's 2020. It's because it's the right thing to do. You broke the color barrier that allowed us to see Tiger Woods, Cameron Champ, Harold Varner III, all these other great players play golf, play at the Masters. He said he broke down in tears when he was told he'll be there with the Golden Bear and Gary Player tomorrow at Augusta.
So amazing.
How about that, fellas?
I think that's mind-boggling. I've known Lee Elder for a while. Mm-hmm. I'm part of a black golf club up in Connecticut, so some of my friends played there from New York all over, and we have conversations about this. Can you imagine? And just, you know, I know we live in a world of empathizing, and I'll just say it one time because I watched the Masters since I can remember being a little boy, being a caddy in Plainfield, New Jersey, that for a guy like Lee, the first time you're playing in Georgia, in the South, in a tournament called Masters.
In 1975.
Like Masters. Just put that, let that sink in for a second to be the first black. Like that says, I can't imagine what he was feeling in a moment like that, understanding the history of that sport and to have that opportunity to be there and participate in that event.
Yeah, and you know that, you know, the black athletes sometimes carry the burden or carry the cross for the others that will follow and have to have that responsibility, whether it's Jackie Robinson. Or whenever you're the first to do anything, and how you have to do it, the dignity and pride and grace in which you have to move in, you got to be apologetic. Mm-hmm. You can't really be who you want to be or who you are, because you have to understand there's a responsibility, not only for yourself and your family, but for others, for those who follow. And the fact that he gets to come full circle and where Tiger Woods are and where we're at now could just be overwhelming. I understand why he broke down.
It's so well said. Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier in baseball. People don't talk about this guy, but another guy that should be in this group is a guy named Marlon Brisco. Mm-hmm. He was the NFL's first black quarterback right. in 1968 with the Denver Broncos. Yep. And then 7 years after that, Lee Elder. He talked about when you drive down Washington Road, which is like the big road to go into the Masters. You've been watching it on television. They'll show the shot of the clubhouse and you see that long drive in. He said when he was making that drive into Magnolia Lane, you're making that drive. He was shaking in 1975. He'd have won an event in 1974. That's how he got in. And sooner rather than later, later rather than sooner, however you want to state it, 45 years after teeing it up as the first black man at Augusta, he'll tee it up tomorrow before the fellas play for the 2020 Masters Championship, the Masters Tournament.
That's still one course I've never played. Pine Valley. I played Baltusrol.
Look right there, say that, because we're going to get you on there.
Pinehurst 2, Pinehurst 7. I've never played that course. It's going to happen one day. Bucket list.
Right.
Look into the camera and tell them. You demand it. This is your platform. You got the juice.
So for the 2021 Masters, get ready. A year from now, Lee Elder there. He got the word. He'll wait a year. And at the 2021 Masters, he will be out there for that ceremonial tee shot.
Amazing.
With Lee Elder, Jack Nicklaus, and Gary Player. The Masters will be played without patrons, and today we ask Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin Nation on Twitter, what sports arena or stadium is most impacted by having no fans in the stands? PSU Joe 91 says Beaver Stadium. Saw that the whiteout game, that what always is packing Beaver Stadium there in central Pennsylvania. Brian says the Carrier Dome, college basketball's largest crowd drawing annually. That'll do it for us. Hopefully Keyshawn will be back tomorrow. You can hear Bart Scott.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
On your show.
Kick me off.
On 98.7.
I'm like Shemp from the Three Stooges.
Thanks for listening to Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 6 Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, or wherever you stream your audio.